And here is a more detailed chronological outline. It will mostly not be too meaningful to you, but it was sort of my first chronological sketch, putting in much more detail than will ever be written down in anything more comprehensive. I'm not transferring this to you. I'm letting you use it, look at it. I'd like you not to copy it. I'd like you to return it to me.
Sure.
But it might be helpful to you in structuring what you want to do.
Okay, that'll be fine.
If you prepare some rough outline of major themes, then I'd like to see it before it goes into any repository.
Oh, sure.
Okay?
Sure, absolutely.
All right.
Okay.
That applies to both of these documents.
Okay.
So, I, you know, you might want to go home and study them in more detail, but
yes.
What more do you think you'd like to do today, or do you want to take a minute or two to look at it, or do you have some things that you already had in mind to get started with?
No, I was not prepared today to start. I thought we'd be best spending our time today just discussing where we're going to go, how we're going to do it,
okay.
And, you know, so that you understood what I was looking for, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And I think it was mainly these notes that I had indicated. I said I had just put together a brief chronological outline and then some notes added on to that as the kind of things that I was looking for.
Well, you'll see much more than you want to use on the chronological agenda and so forth. And I think you'll see an answer to your question about dates and so forth. Now, I'd still not like to waste the opportunity to visit. Maybe there's some of this go together right now if you felt there'd be any point to it. What's your feeling on the matter?
Well, if you want to spend some time...
I have until 2:30, that's my constraint, so it's an hour.
You know, one of the things we usually start with is parents and family background.
Okay, as much as I know is down there.
All right.
You know, what to add that would come across orally is still clearer. I think you'd want to read through that before... going further, but I've already highlighted to you the centrality of my dialectic with my father. The central point is he was an Orthodox rabbi. He was an immigrant from what is now Israel, then Palestine. He was quite fluent in English. He had been well-educated, more of a seminary education than a university or a collegiate one. He had been viewed as a brilliant scholar and, in fact, had been sent to the United States. There's a conflicting account when he was 15 and he was 18 for studies here. I've tried to track down documentation on that without much success, although he appears to have been enrolled in what is now the Yeshiva University, as at least one of the places he was connected with. They can't find any records on him. That was fortunate for me in a number of ways, but the one thing it established is he got the equivalent of the green card at that time, and the iron gates were slammed shut on immigration not long thereafter, but on the strength of his prior residence, he was able to immigrate here in 1924. A point I never investigated during their lifetime, but in the few surviving records after my mother died, some of that became a little bit clearer how that became possible. But he had a religious vocation. I would have liked to have probed more deeply just where he stood on issues of modernity, and I suspect he was in some conflict. A very Orthodox background, and there's a family background in a tradition that goes back centuries in that direction. I also recall him as someone who was very much interested in America, in being a good American, and in keeping up with the times in a wide variety of ways. And there was a certain ambivalence when he had a child who had no interest in, certainly zero in, the ritualistic aspect of the Jewish faith, thoroughly involved and immersed in science about that kind of reconciliation. And that's what our debate was about.
Mm-hmm.
I've continued to regard science as a vocation, and when I think he accepted it as a parallel to his. But the detail of that is something I would like to work out more clearly, especially in our dialectical access, access to some degree in my own mind. But I'm not sure that there's more that I can, that I'm able to dig out on that issue at this point. Other elements. Well, the nature of that family tradition is of some consequence. There again, I've been I was very tardy about trying to collect the genealogical information, and no developed interest in this during my parents' lifetime, which is unfortunate. So I never got very much firsthand from them. I ended up being a family historian, although the records would be mostly in Israel. There's a large Lederberg clone in Israel. They're all from one family. I think throughout the world, I think they are. The name is a unique one. And that's a puzzle in itself. And what does it mean? And I have no good evidence on that point. But comes from a town in Poland called Plus, 100 miles or so west of Warsaw on the Vistula. And whether there's anything left in the Holocaust documentation or in the town, I just don't know. I've had one or two friends take a cursory look at those materials and not have a more detailed investigation. What's more important is the sense of tradition that went along with that, and that was that they strongly developed tradition of rabbinical scholarship on both sides. I now realize it was far more deeply ingrained in my mother's side than my father's. Most of my father's relatives were business people, but there was a sprinkling of rabbis among them, including especially the progenitor, who was called the Gaon, the Ayatollah of that part of Poland. But most of their descendants went into real estate or middle class people from Jerusalem. Through the Turkish occupation, right, through the British advances. There's a story about my mother at age 15, and, a nurse, and working heroically for some of the wounded and helping reassure the people in Jerusalem during the time of the actual conflict. What truth there is in that, I just don't know, but that was supposed to have been one of the virtues that was presented to my father's family when they were negotiating their marriage. So that's what I recall by way of background. So this is, in a way, retro-Zionistic, the movement away from Israel, and trying to represent the ideals of Judaism in the diaspora. And I guess I do stand for that. In my own way, just as strongly as my father did. End of report.
I believe you said he came here in 24?
He was first here in 21. He was here in 21. Whether he had come here as early as right after or 18 seems problematical, but there are pieces of paper that I don't trust that say that. No later than 1918, he was, excuse me, the 1921, he was a student here. He was born in 1903. Then went back to Israel, claimed it was, I'm sure, negotiated marriage, and brought his bride, my mother, with him back to the States in 1924. I was born there. Here.
What are your earliest recollections?
Well, I wrote some of them down. That's, maybe screen memories, but here we go.
Okay, Lindbergh.
Those traumatic events. I was the dates enough certain there. This I've been able to look up. My brother was born when I was 3 and a half. and then starting kindergarten, early school, so I have vague recollections from when I was 4 or 5 years old.
So you were here yet in New York, right?
Oh, I was, yes. I was born in Montclair, 6 months old. We moved to New York.
Okay.
And I have what I'm sure is a false memory of a train ride from Montclair to New York, but I don't believe it. This is a piece of documentation my mother had saved. That's an interesting fact, and that's literal.
Okay. You said you had no. You weren't inclined to follow the way your father had, the family tradition, as it were, in a religious tradition.
No, I thought that was medieval, that quite apart from the core of philosophical validity that there might be in Judaic teachings, maybe I did know. I mean, I would have allied myself with a Spinoza rather than my father. A heretic within the faith, if you like. but I chafed under the ritual. There was the Saturdays were the best days I would have available to want to go to the library and so on, and that was forbidden, so I evaded it. I'd walk a mile so that none of my father's parishioners would see me, and then get on the subway to go downtown to the public library. So I thought that was very old-fashioned, and I didn't understand why they kept doing things, and I would hark back to everything that my father was. Were all these things being done at the time of the temple? Or are they ill-informed accretions through the experience of the shtetl? Jews were very tightly segregated and not part of the larger world and so on. So I was going back to fundamentalism.
How did your mother respond to these?
Fairly pragmatically. I mean, she said, as my father did, said, you know, whatever you think about the matter, your father's job depends on your not being seen as being in violation. They would be horrified at doing it, and we'll talk about it privately, but they didn't tell me I would be damned and go to hell on these points. They had their own reservations about those deviations, but they were restrained. I mean, they didn't, they discouraged me, but didn't condemn me for the deviation. And at other times, they'd be very proud of what I might represent. And well, we had role models like Einstein and Chaim Weizmann were very common images in Jewish thought generally at that time, but also as scientists, they were tailor-made for my view of the world. And I'm sure Albert Einstein did not observe the Sabbath. I'm sure he was regarded as a wonderful and great Jew, and I would throw that up to my father. Not an unreasonable standard of behavior on my part.
I was curious about your comment about your father's job, because I've known ministers' children, mm-hmm. Protestant ministers' children,
yeah.
Who grew up in a small town and had that same situation.
Mm-hmm.
They were restricted in their behavior because of their father's position, mm-hmm. as being a religious leader. And it created problems for a lot of them.
Yeah.
It really did.
Well, there were also other expectations going. We had Hebrew school on Sundays, and I was expected to follow that faithfully, and also expected that I could be the paragon of achievement there as well, something I really didn't care much about. I'd have to go to services unendingly. So I've told many people, and I've had enough religious observation until I was 13 to last me a lifetime, and I'll leave it at that.
What about your brother?
Well, I have two brothers. I haven't probed this issue directly with Seymour, who's close to me in age and has had a somewhat similar career. I think he feels much as I do about it. We have a much younger brother who's a religious fanatic, and a dangerous person. With the depth, he's one of the Bubba Tereza's movement. He thinks Schneerson is the Messiah and proselytizing all the time. And somewhat kooky, not somewhat, more than a little. So he's reverted all the other way. I mean, I'm sure my father would be aghast at his extremism. So. So, great surprises and family dynamics.
What's the age difference?
16 years. He's a grandfather. That really came home to me. My baby brother's a grandfather. He lives in Jerusalem now.
When did you start reading in earnest? I mean, you talked about very early in your life setting your goals. I'm sure that...
Well, I can't remember when they were otherwise. This is the only documentation I have, and it was a second grade, a class essay, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And that was my statement at the time. Now, I don't know how seriously to take it. Was that something I invented at the moment, or if it might be a good idea, what level of commitment, I don't know. But within a few years of that, I was very actively reading all the science I could, so... I'm sure by the time I was 10, I can remember that headline. I've seen it again, so it was...
That's the Stanley. Okay.
Tobacco mosaic virus. Mm-hmm. So, and that was... I went to look for it again, and, I could spot it instantly once I saw it on the page on the New York Times. And, there again, I was I had teachers who were already nurturing me as a precocious child. And,
that's what I want.
I had a contract with them. If I cooperated with them in helping the class move on with its business, they'd leave me alone and I could sit in the back room and study all the things I wanted. I remember confounding. The date's okay within a year or so. Confounding my algebra teacher with a phony proof that 2 = 1, and that she couldn't work her way out of it. I mean, that was that's what precipitated these contracts.
Which is something you did purposely to, and you were, at least you had the support of these teachers. That
I did when I got to that stage. I mean, there was a point I was just so bored and didn't think they were such great scholars, which is true. But that's not the whole story, obviously, in teaching. And when they were very wise people and very compassionate, and when they would admit that to me, deal with me as an adult and say, "Look, we both have a problem to deal with. I've got to bring the rest of this class up to what it is that they need to know, and you've got to find some way to use your time effectively, and don't do it by teasing me all the time. You probably can catch me up on these things, but is that what you want to do the rest of your life?" I mean, so they would have hard talks offer me in those terms. So we worked out a very good agreement. So around about this time, 8 to 10 years old, I was certainly solidly involved in self-study.
And while it was directed in the scientific area, did it range over other topics as well?
You might say both. It was largely concentrated in science, but a lot of history, philosophy, political science kind of events. I was very much involved in what was going on in Europe, Hitler's rise, what the U.S. was going to do about it, things of that kind. So, I tried to teach myself everything I could. I tried to teach myself music out of a book. with the notes meant, what the measures were, and so on. What a futile enterprise. But I did have a very good public library, and again, the librarians were very helpful, very nurturing. And, they put no limit on the number of books I could check out and help me find things I wanted and so on. So I had nothing but help in that regard.
Did you have any friends your age who were similarly inclined?
No, that was a very troublesome point, and it wasn't until I got to high school that I had fears, and I felt very lonely doing that interval. I did have the luck to catch up again with one of my grade school classmates who remembers that interval. It's a strange series of circumstances. He's married to somebody I know pretty well, but I didn't know the connection between the two of them. A common friend brought that out, and they lived here in New York for some time. They quite recently moved out to Cincinnati. I had dinner with them just a couple of weeks ago. I had a little business there, and she remembered me very well. I hadn't seen her in 55 years, and said that I was widely recognized as a phenomenon. And I said, "You mean a freak?" And he said, "No, it wasn't that. We just knew you were somebody and pretty special. We knew we might have to make some allowances for you." That he didn't go into much detail about that, but I thought I was pretty brash and rude and self-important and so on. He minimized that. There may have been a little of that, but we all understood. It was amazing to me. I mean, they must have been wonderful kids. I mean,
yes.
I've seen, you know, another observation, exactly the opposite of how youngsters can gang up on somebody that they're jealous of or something of that sort. And I think that was genuine, what she said about it. I don't recall much negative from that part of my peers. I just felt isolated from them. She gave me a picture about that. Isn't that something?
Was that, you suppose that isolation was on an intellectual level,
yeah,
that you just couldn't talk? I mean,
yeah.
Their interests were so totally different.
That's what she said eventually when she said, you know, what do you mean by allowances? She said, well, you just weren't interested in the things that we were, but and we couldn't keep up with you, but we knew that what you were doing was important, and you would be something someday. So,
that's fascinating.
And I had the same general nurture from my teachers. What only occurred to me after my conversation with her is that I had viewed this as one at a time, and I think about London and Sawyer. Will you excuse me? I think I was saying about the relationship with my teachers. It just occurred to me that they must have had some collective discussion, too, about what to do about and for Joshua. I mean, it was a pretty consistent response, and it just had never occurred to me before that I would have been an object of discussion. But so some of the other things that Abby mentioned make it pretty clear that I was. So I was... what that was about was, if you can believe this, they've been doing some standardized tests on standardizing the IQ test. They actually announced the results, and I was supposed to have had the highest score of anybody in the Eastern United States or something of that sort. And Abby was one of the runners-up. Why she remembers it, and she recalled having made a rather graceful acknowledgement, and Joshua was asked to comment, supposed to throw my shoulder and said, naturally. So, I was not invisible to the faculty.
Did you get promotion? I mean, skip grades,
yeah,
or anything?
Yeah, I skipped a couple of years that way. So, I finished high school when I was 15 and a half. And I had to wait till that fall before I could enter Columbia and spend a 15-year engagement.
How did, well,
I guess it's obvious, but let's discuss how your selection of Stuyvesant Limited. And that wasn't automatic that you would go there, right?
Well, they had a competition for students interested in science, and they offered a special curriculum, and then there was a special peer group, so the way it was automatic, given the circumstances, that I would try, and I had no trouble being admitted, and that's where I went. And it was the peer group that made it very special, and that was the first time that we had to have a bunch of youngsters that I could relate to, and had shared interests, and were surprised by work, so it did make a big difference. The teachers were, I would say in some respects, not as experienced and wise as the ones I had in grade school, but maybe that's because I was a bit older, viewed it differently. They were fine, and, a couple of them were really superlative, others were about what to expect.
This was a time when it was not uncommon to have PhDs teaching in high school.
There were a few, but not many. The one best known was an English, Dr. Shipley. Had books on etymology and so on. I barely knew him, but and the principal sometimes had a PhD, but there weren't very many. And there were no research scholars in high school teaching. I was keenly aware of that, and it was not until I got to college that I could meet people who really knew what scientific research was about.
What about laboratory exposure? You've been doing all this reading even earlier on in science,
yeah.
But now, when did you get your hands on to something that...
Well, like every other kid in those days, I had my own chemistry lab at home and drew myself up a few times. It would be going through all the recipes and making all the azo dyes and discovering new reactions and all that kind of stuff. School labs were pretty dull. Then learned analytical organic and dissolving hydrogen sulfide. We had a few advanced placement labs and learning how to use a balance in quantitative analysis. Hardly any organic chemistry, and that's what excited me the most. I had to do that at home. I taught myself that. I was able to get advanced placement when I got to college, and was able to move into quite advanced courses.
How early did you acquire this chemistry stuff?
Well, I guess something like that. Well, I was reading Vodansky's textbook because it was on chemistry, if that's something. There was a little disconnect between Greg Printer's experiment and much more sophisticated reading. But they were fun.
How did your parents react to it?
Well, I don't think they fully understood the risks I was taking. I'm not sure I did either. I played with potassium cyanide with a foam and so on. There could have been grave mishaps. The fact that, with the exception of one or two fires or explosions, the opportunity for poisoning would probably have been grimmer, but nothing ever happened. I had a healthy respect for what they could do.
How did you acquire your chemicals?
There was no problem. Imer and Ahmed would sell them to anybody over the counter. I shudder. They sold me 200 grams of sodium. And I was experimenting with progressive increment was the largest amount you could throw into a pot of water, and still only have it in using pump. There's a little thing in CN a week or two ago, somebody commenting after reading the Woodward symposium review that none of those things would be possible today.
From what you said, a lot of your laboratory early experience in a quote laboratory setting was chemically oriented.
Well, at school I was in the biology club and learned histology and how to make sections, and I was doing a lot of that. And I got interested in microchemistry and cytochemistry, and I thought that was what I thought my career was going to be, using advanced microchemical technology to explore the chemical nature of the cell. Just exactly the wording I would have used when I was 15. And so I was systematically going through staining reactions and how they might be influenced by fixation. And I got interested in the nucleolus, a basophilic staining material that was Welgen negative. I would have been able to figure that out, but we didn't know what it was, and trying to figure out the microchemical procedures, but it was going to determine its chemical composition. It was the appropriate scale to be asking questions like that. I didn't know it, but that was just about the time that Rachet introduced use of mononucleases as differential reagents, and the removal of basophilia with mononucleases is evidence that it's mostly RNA. So, I was still fumbling with the issue.